high-tech than we are.
This is Victor Cunicelli of the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission. Today's date is July 14, 2010. The time is approximately 11:45 Eastern Standard Time. I'm accompanied by Brad Bundy and John
Armstrong.
John Armstrong of the FCIC and counsel and Andrew Plepler. We are at the offices of Wilmer Hale for the interview of Mr. Plepler. The interview will be recorded with the consent of Mr. Plepler. Mr. Plepler, could I get your verbal assent for the record?
Yes.
Great. Will everyone please state your full name and affiliation for the record?
Tabitha Oman, Wilmer Hale, New York.
How's that for timing? Mike Sharp, Wilmer Hale, New York.
Beth Ebar, Korean Bank of America.
Rich Brown, Wilmer Hale.
Okay. Andrew Plepler, Bank of America.
If we could just spell them as we...
Sure. Andrew Plepler, P-L-E-P-L-E-R.
Okay.
Mike Sharp, S-H-A-R-P.
Beth Ibarra, Korean. Ibarra, Y-B-A-R-R-A. Korean, C-R-E-A-N.
Reg Brown, B-R-O-W-N.
Okay. And for the record, Cunicelli is C-U-N-I-C-E-L-L-I.
Brad Bondi from the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission, B-O-N-D-I.
John Armstrong from the FCIC, A-R-M-S-T-R-O-N-G.
Okay. In the way of background, Mr. Plepler, the FCIC was established by statute and signed into law by the President. It is bipartisan and consists of 10 commissioners. It's charged with examining the causes of the financial crisis and collapse or near collapse of major domestic financial institutions. The commission is charged with composing a report of findings to the President and Congress by December 15, 2010. The commission may compel attendance and testimony of witnesses and production of records. I can provide you a copy of the statute by which the commission was...
Joining conference.
David Olsky.
O-L-S-K-Y.
Thank you. Was formed if you so desire. Please be advised that the FCIC is an agency of the United States, and FCIC staff are federal employees under the aegis of 18 United States Code Section 1001 concerning false statements. All right.
Mr. Olsky, is he with Wilmer?
Wilmer, yep.
Great. Okay, great.
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
I think we might be setting a record for the number of lawyers here in one interview.
Real briefly, if we could start out, what I'd like you to do is just, if you could give me some bio, maybe starting with your educational background and then your work experience.
Sure. College, graduated Franklin and Marshall College in 1983. Graduated University of Miami School of Law in 1986 with a JD. Worked at the New York State Urban Development Corporation as an assistant counsel from 86 through 88. May of 1989, went to work at the Department of Justice Tax Division. Stayed there till 1998. From 1998 to 2003, I was at the Fannie Mae Foundation. And in 2003, went to work at Bank of America. My role has initially was as president of the Bank of America Foundation, and subsequently took on some additional responsibilities, and the role is now more of a corporate social responsibility portfolio of responsibilities that includes the foundation, oversight of CRA, our environmental initiative, we have an arts and culture platform, and we have a group that's called Support Services, which is 300 cognitively and physically disabled associates who work at the company, that's part of my team. And I, in the last year and a half, taken on responsibility for what we call the consumer policy executive role, which works with community groups across the country on consumer issues, hearing sort of their perspective on issues like loan modifications, foreclosures, fees, and trying to make sure we're having a robust dialogue between our businesses and community groups across the country.
Okay. How big is your division? How many direct reports do you have? How many employees total?
I probably have 10 right now, because we've you know, it's just a lot of different areas. So the arts and culture, the environment, CRA, philanthropy, all have somebody managing it. Total is about 500, but that includes the 300 support services employees that, you know, is in our group. It's run really as a separate program. People working on the issues of CSR, it's probably about 220, 230 okay. Across the country.
Now, you have Community Reinvestment Act responsibilities which come under your office.
Right. There's a chief CRA officer for the company that reports to me.
And who is that?
Tish Sechrest.
Okay. Okay. And you're familiar that we've given Bank of America some interrogatories. And,
yep.
Have you familiarized yourself with
yep.
those materials prior to this? Okay. Great. Could you just give me, in the way of background, kind of Bank of America's philosophy on CRA compliance and whatnot?
Sure. We've had, I believe it's six consecutive outstanding CRA ratings, and the company has always sort of been proud of that record of reinvesting in the communities where we live and work. And our general philosophy is that to serve all of our communities is good business, and so investing in the communities where all of our customers live and all of our associates live and work is good business and something that we've been proud to do pretty well over the years.
Okay. Okay. And let me. You want to? Yeah.
Good morning, Mr.
Plepler. You can call me Andrew.
Plepler.
Yep.
I'll try to pronounce that
Andrew
correctly.
Andrew is fine.
Plepler. Good morning, Mr. Plepler. As I mentioned at Stardom, Brad Bobby with the
sure.
Financial Crisis Inquiry. How long have you been involved yourself in dealing with CRA-related issues at Bank of America?
Probably since CRA probably came under me in 07, 08.
So 2007, 2008?
Right. So I had the foundation exclusively probably 04 to 06, and somewhere we did some reorganization. CRA came under me somewhere in that time frame.
Who was your predecessor in your position that handled CRA before you?
Well, it's bounced around. I mean, CRA has resided in a few different areas of the bank. So in its history, to be honest, it from a reporting, so I don't know how specific you want me to be, from a reporting relationship, it's moved around. It had been in the compliance area.
Mm-hmm.
It reported to a guy at one point, interestingly, who had responsibility over sponsorships. It was just sort of a anomaly of reporting structure, and it was so a guy by Doug Woodruff was a guy who had responsibility for it probably until he left the company around 06.
And how long was he with the company?
Oh God, he was there for a long time. I don't know how long.
And he had been handling CRA related
yeah.
issues for a number of years?
Yeah. Again, sort of in my capacity, he was not the direct CRA officer, but it reported into him.
Okay. And if you could take me through the chronology from, let's say, 1998, to the extent you're familiar with the history of how CRA was handled at Bank of America to the present, and who had what components in terms of responsibilities of CRA. Before we get there, I think it might be useful and helpful for a little bit of a definition. And that is, when I say CRA, Community Reinvestment Act is the law, which I'm sure you're familiar with. Is that fair?
Yep.
And there are obligations, legal requirements under that law that go into your ratings. Is that fair? Legal obligations?
Yeah, this CRA is a statute that's then enforced by the regulators.
And I understand there's also something called voluntary agreements related to CRA, meaning agreements that Bank of America may enter into with community groups. Are you familiar with that?
I don't know that there's any, no, I don't know that there's any specific, anything that specifically refers to voluntary agreements, no.
Are you familiar, though, the agreements with respect to lending and mortgage lending that Bank of America has done with third-party groups, community groups, and the like?
Yeah, I'm familiar with, familiar to some extent.
Okay. And then I understand there's something called unilateral commitments, where Bank of America announces that it will do certain lending, but not in connection with any agreement with a third-party group. Are you familiar with those sorts of unilateral commitments that Bank of America has announced?
I don't know. You refer to it as if there's like some term of art, unilateral agreements. I've never heard it described that way.
Mm-hmm.
Are there statements we make about our goals for community investment? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what I would be interested in asking you about today are the obligations under the statute that Bank of America has, any sort of agreements that Bank of America has entered into with third parties, community groups, to do certain lending. And then the third area would be any sort of what I've deemed, and I'm using that term from the NCRC, National Community Reinvestment Coalition, uses the term unilateral commitments. And these are announcements that Bank of America may talk about and announce in terms of goals that it sets for community lending. So when I use CRA, it will be used in terms as a catch-all phrase of CRA unless I distinguish otherwise. Is that fair just for purposes of our interview?
If that's the way you want to categorize it, that may not be the way I would categorize
sure.
it.
Okay. Well, what I'm interested in, though, is who had responsibility in the organization since 1998 for those three areas? The statutory obligations, any sort of voluntary agreements with third parties, and any sort of unilateral announcements that the bank may have made in terms of goals for purposes of lending?
So for the specific CRA compliance, that's probably the easiest. So Tish Sechrist has been with the company since, I don't know how long, but she was at the company in 1998. So she manages the CRA compliance. Now, as you probably know, the activities under CRA really are owned by the respective lines of business, you know, who do the lending, who do the banking center, where banking centers are placed, where our tax credit investments are made. Those all reside in specific business areas of the company.
Well, let's maybe make things even more specific. I'm interested in the mortgages that Bank of America has extended under the CRA,
okay.
Or any agreements with third-party community groups to do certain mortgage lending, or the third category would be any announcement that Bank of America has made with respect to goals in terms of mortgage lending to community groups and community areas. Who has had responsibility for those three areas since 1998?
Well, mortgage lending would be, you know, don't forget we've had several mergers since 1998. So I'm not going to know all of the people that were involved in mortgage lending pre-Fleet, pre-Countrywide, pre-LaSalle. So, you know, I want to be clear that there were a lot of people at Fleet, Countrywide, LaSalle, MBNA involved in mortgage lending since 1998. At Legacy Bank of America, there were, you know, I mean, in my time, I don't know if this was 1998, the consumer real estate business, which is where mortgage lending resided, there was a guy, Kevin Shannon, who's no longer with the company. There was a guy, Floyd Robinson, who was no longer with the company. It now falls under Barbara DeSore, who runs Bank of America Home Loans, based in Calabasas.
And in your current position, do the three different areas that I've described in terms of the legal compliance, any sort of voluntary agreements with community groups, or any sort of announcements unilaterally of goals that Bank of America has in terms of mortgage lending, would that all flow up to you?
I'm not trying to not answer your question, but it's complicated in an organization the size of Bank of America. So mm-hmm. What I'm telling you is that I do not go out and say, this is how much lending we're going to do. We set, more specifically, sort of Tish Seacrest sets goals for lending that will meet the CRA obligations of the company, and works closely with the line of business to track performance over time. So from a legal compliance standpoint with the statute, my team works closely with the line of business to make sure that the goals are being set and the performance is being tracked. In terms of the voluntary, any agreement that we have, to the extent it exists, I have not entered into any voluntary agreement with a community group. There are some that have existed, like NACA has existed. We have an agreement with NACA that's existed for quite a few years. And I don't know who signed those agreements, if you want to know the specific of that.
Who would have been responsible, though, for reaching that agreement with NACA? Was that your predecessor? Was this Mr. Woodruff?
If you know the answer, if you don't know the answer to the question, just tell me the answer.
Yeah, I mean, I would say... Well, the one agreement with NACA that I think Sandy Samuels, who was the general counsel at Countrywide, is probably the one agreement I know of. And he recently retired.
Have you made any announcements of any goals, you, your team, relating to mortgage lending to communities or community groups since you joined your position in 2007?
Yeah. So at the time of, we announced a $1.5 trillion community development lending and investing goal, which has several components to it. And basically, it is a statement of our sort of aspirational lending and investing goals for, this is not a CRA commitment or goal, this is a lending and investing goal that talks about lending and investing in low and moderate income communities and minority communities.
And does that include a mortgage component, that $1.5 trillion
development? Yeah, performance would qualify, would roll up to the 1.5. So if we did mortgages to LMI or minority borrowers, that rolls up. And as you know, CRA does not have a minority component to it.
Was that commitment that you described, or announcement of $1.5 trillion, was that in connection with the Countrywide acquisition?
It was announced, in that time frame. It was not a part of the, depending on what you mean by that, it was announced around that time in the 2007 time frame, around the time when we merged with Countrywide.
How did that commitment come about?
It is not unusual for, and we're not the only financial institution to have done these, but at a time of mergers, there's a lot of concern sometimes that 1 + 1 will not equal 2 in the eyes of the communities where the acquired bank has been investing. So there's sometimes concern that the acquiring institution will not sustain a level of investing in communities that had prior existed. So what we do is reaffirm our intention to continue to lend and invest so that communities where we live and work will economically thrive.
Mm-hmm. And how did this specific, though, announcement of the $1.5 trillion, can you talk me through the chronology of how that developed in terms of your role and the role of your team? How did the number get calculated? Who was involved with that? Did you consult community groups? Were you consulted by community groups? Did you speak to lawyers associated with the merger? If you could talk me through the chronology leading up to that announcement there.
Well, I don't know that I can give you a specific chronology. I mean, generally how these things work is going into a merger environment that there's concern, public officials, community groups, media, various stakeholders concerned about wanting to hear from the bank that it's going to reaffirm its intention to lend and invest in ways that create economic vitality. And so going in that this is something you're going to want to address. We work closely with our business partners who make up the activity that rolls up to that number about their sort of projected business activity that would qualify as under the framework, and you sort of roll a number into that, to be perfectly honest, that says, given our projected activity of lending and investing, this is the level of activity that is sort of projected and that we are comfortable saying publicly the bank has a goal and an aspiration over the next 10 years of lending and investing $1.5 trillion in communities across the country to demonstrate that we have every intention of being an economic engine for the communities where we live and work.
And you've described generally how the process works, and I just want to make sure that what you've described is from your experiences at Bank of America as opposed from your experiences in the 90s or at other companies.
Well, this is Bank of America is the only company I've had experience with this sort of process. So
you're speaking then from Bank of America experience.
Yeah.
I understand. Thank you. You said something about you know going into the merger acquisition that there's concern in the community with community groups. How do you know going into a merger acquisition that there's concern?
Well, part of my job, I work with community groups all the time. So part of my corporate social responsibility role is to be outreaching to community groups on a host of issues, business practices, lending and investing, serving the communities where we live and work. So I always know sort of what's on their mind, what issues, and it is not unusual, particularly in a merger environment, for local communities to worry about what potential impact a merger will have in a particular community. And that's not limited to community groups. That's limited to people who live there, nonprofit arts institutions that are sometimes the recipient of large sponsorships or from the bank that's now being acquired, sports marketing. So the bank banks in a time of merger have, you know, relationships in a local community that where people get nervous.
And when, can you give me some specifics in your experiences with Bank of America where a community group has expressed concern over a merger or acquisition that the bank has done?
Well, you keep, I want to be clear, I mean, you keep, and I'm happy to talk about the community group piece, but I want just for your understanding that it is not limited to community groups. It's limited to, I mean, it extends to, you know, nonprofits, arts institutions, politicians, press, a host, anybody living in Wilmington, Delaware at the time of the MBNA merger was very nervous about whether or not Bank of America would sustain the level of engagement in that community that existed prior to the merger.
And were you involved in that merger?
MBNA? Mm-hmm. I was with Bank of America at the time of the MBNA merger, yeah.
And you had a role in interacting with the community groups associated with that merger?
Yeah, to a lesser extent, probably limited to, at that time, I think the only thing really that was raised with people, you know, MBNA was very philanthropic in Delaware, mm-hmm. and, you know, how would the philanthropic commitment in Delaware be sustained over time? That was sort of that was probably the extent of any discussions that I had with local groups, and we met with a host of nonprofits, sort of reaffirming our commitment to that community.
And in terms of your meetings with community groups, and why don't we stick to the MBNA merger for a moment, would the community groups present any sort of data to you showing the bank's track record in terms of lending? Would there be discussions in terms of data, or was this more abstract in nature, these conversations?
More abstract.
And how important are the community groups to your team and to Bank of America leading up to an acquisition or a merger? How important are the concerns of the community groups?
How is he supposed to? I don't understand. Were you asking him to quantify that or what?
You interact with community groups, I understood.
Yeah.
Okay. And you've heard their concerns.
Sure.
Okay. And how important to you and your team are their concerns and addressing those concerns leading up to a merger or an acquisition, like, for instance, the MBNA deal?
Well, it's part of my ongoing responsibility, so I wouldn't is to work with community groups and be accessible and have dialogue on issues that they may want to raise about business practices or philanthropy. Or I do that daily, you know, 365 days a year, whether we're in a merger environment or not.
Did you have any interaction with regulators over the MBNA merger? Did you yourself or your team have interaction with regulators?
Well, I'm sure, not my team. To my knowledge, I never met with regulators around that merger.
What other mergers or acquisitions did you yourself be involved in terms of speaking with community groups about their concerns?
I was at Bank of America at the time of the Fleet merger. I was at Bank of America at the time of the LaSalle merger, the Countrywide merger, and the Merrill Lynch merger. Any others?
He covered it.
Why don't we go through these?
I guess the point of information, what the earlier mergers have to do with the causes of the financial crisis, which is the mandate that we're here under today. I'd just like to understand what the connection is.
Well, we're doing a confidential investigation into the causes of the financial crisis. We're exploring various theories, and would like to continue with the interview. Happy to talk to you after the interview about the work of the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission more generally. But why don't we talk separately about that so that we can continue on with the interview. Mr. Pluff, did I say that?
Close
correct?
Enough.
The Fleet merger.
Yeah.
Tell me what community groups did you meet with associated with the Fleet merger?
I mean, I probably can't tell you.
Just so we're clear, because you keep saying community groups, and I think you mean the NACAs of the world. When you say community groups, it sounds like you're talking about a much broader array of things.
Right.
I just want to make sure we're talking about the same things here.
I'm actually talking about his term.
Okay, fine.
Community groups.
As long as we're clear.
I don't want to redefine anything that he's used.
Okay.
I was just merely picking up on your phrase, community groups and communities.
Okay. Sure.
I'm just interested in the nature in terms of how the work comes about, what you do. I'm trying to learn more about how things work in connection with mergers and acquisitions in terms
so
of your
like
your
I role. Like I've said, you know, it's a fairly broad level of outreach,
mm-hmm.
And it can be from nonprofit mentoring programs, you know, who've received support from Fleet in the past, and you know, we often arrange an array of, you know, nonprofit groups to come in and sort of see a face of Bank of America to demystify what's, you know, who these people are. So that's a normal sort of course of activity that we'll do. You know, it may be sitting down with, you know, the Boston Red Sox Foundation if we're a sponsor of a sports sponsorship arrangement from the legacy company. I mean, part of a merger environment is simply going to that community and being the face of the acquiring company to say, here's how we run our business, here's how we support the community, you know, any questions you want to ask, and what are your concerns?
Did you hear anyone, any groups that you met with in connection with the Fleet merger, who said they were objecting to the merger? Did anyone say to you that they objected to Bank of America coming in to merge with Fleet?
You know, there are often some groups that object to mergers, and I don't recall specifically at the Fleet merger whether anybody actually objected to it. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. What do you recall?
Wouldn't be unusual if you told me somebody did object to it. I just don't recall.
Okay. And when and if a group objects to a merger on grounds of the bank's commitment under the Community Reinvestment Act, how do you address those concerns or objections?
That's not necessarily the basis of... They usually don't object on those grounds.
Okay. What grounds do they object under?
They object... you know, so, I mean, I'll use one example. Greenlining is a group that in California that theoretically is not always thrilled about mergers. And their concern is generally whether 1 + 1 will equal 2 in terms of support of local communities. So in their case, it's California. And whether it's a utility or a bank, they're worried about will the level of support in the community be as robust post-merger as pre-merger.
And please help me understand what you mean by support in the community. I'm not familiar with what you're saying.
He's already explained what that meant in terms of what happens and what the bank does. And he said it at least twice that I've heard, 1 + 1 = 2, where the bank might be sponsoring philanthropic organizations or, you know, doing things in the organization or making loans or whatever it might be. What are you not getting? Because I think he's already answered that.
Mr. Sharp, you said you were talking about Green Line.
Plepler.
I'm sorry. I forget who's testifying here, it seems. Mr. Plepler, I apologize.
That's all right.
You were talking just now about Green Line. Earlier,
right.
we were talking about Green Line, and what I'm interested in is when you said they were concerned, they mean Green Line, were concerned about the bank's support in the community.
Right.
I don't understand what you mean
right.
by
they
support.
They typically, as an example, are worried about the level of community investment and involvement that will exist post-merger. And as I said earlier, that can be philanthropy of local nonprofits, arts and culture, volunteerism levels, if the merger results in job losses in a local community, you know, will there be as many associates volunteering in supporting community activities? All of that is, you know, sports sponsorships collectively, that is part of our community investment activity that at a time of merger creates some, you know, anxiety, I guess, among various stakeholders in a merger environment.
Who are did the various stakeholders include the regulators?
The Fed has to approve, in my experience, the Fed has approved each of these mergers. And so they, I think the only time there's been a Fed hearing has been at the Fleet merger and at the Countrywide merger. Other than that, I don't have personal knowledge of what the regulators actually look into.
With respect to the Fleet merger, was there any agreements that were entered into by Bank of America and any community groups or third-party organizations with respect to mortgage lending?
Well, I saw this morning the one with, I have not read the agreement, but with Mass Housing Partnership.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know. Again, I would be careful to say that that was in connection with the merger, because I don't know that to be the case.
And was that the agreement with Mass Housing Partnership, was that something you and your group had involvement in entering into?
Yeah, it wasn't me at the time in 2004, and I don't know who entered into that. But again, that would be, I don't know about that agreement specifically, but it doesn't surprise me that it exists.
Does it surprise you that it was made in the same time period as the Fleet merger?
No.
Okay. And what do you know, you personally know, because I don't want to ask you about something that happened before your time, but what do you personally know about that agreement, the Massachusetts Housing?
Yeah, I actually
agreement?
Don't know much about that okay. specific agreement, to be honest with you.
And is that something your group has been tracking and implementing?
That's a good question. I don't know if it is still active, or if the terms of it were completed. I think if it's being tracked, if it's still active. I think it's in the Community Development Bank, which is not in my organization. I can check that for you if you're interested.
That'd be helpful. I want to understand who is responsible for, at the bank, keeping track of whether or not the bank meets its various commitments. For example, like the Massachusetts Housing Partnership Agreement, is that centralized or is that in various different divisions?
Well, I would say it's depending on what agreement you're referring to, I got to imagine that there's, I mean, many agreements that the bank has on a variety of different issues, legal settlements that are monitored in a whole host of places.
And that's a very fair question and a very fair criticism of my question.
No,
so let me get more specific to what you're doing, Mr. Plethler. What agreements do you and your group track?
We track we have three public goals that my group tracks. We made an announcement to do $2 billion of philanthropy over 10 years. We have a goal to...
May I interrupt on that one? Just that $2 billion of philanthropy over 10 years, was that in connection with any particular group, or was that an announcement of a goal?
Overall goal at the top of the house.
And did that include any mortgage lending activity?
No. Pure philanthropy.
Okay. And when was that?
I don't know whether that was 2007 or whether 2009 was the first year of tracking that, or whether 2008 was. I actually don't know.
I interrupted you, and you were going to say there was a second, I believe.
Yeah, there's a second, which is we made a announced a goal to invest $20 billion over 10 years in environmental initiatives. And that includes a lot of our investment in our own corporate workplace activities and, low carbon energy initiative. And that we track. And the first year of that was 2009. And the third goal is a $1.5 trillion lending and investing, which you've referred to earlier. And my group tracks that as well. And we just announced 2009 performance. So that was year one of that.
Are all of these after the financial crisis? Can you say 2009? I just want to understand which ones of these predate the crisis and which ones come after the financial crisis.
Well, when do you define the financial crisis? Brian,
if you wouldn't mind, just hold your...
The financial crisis, I guess these guys were set up in December of last year.
These were set up probably in
08. In 08.
And, maybe 07.
I'd be happy to have you... line of direct or redirect after we finish on any of these points. When was the $1.5 trillion commitment?
I think that we announced that, well, if we just reported the first year of results, you know what? I don't want to misspeak on this, and I want to say 2007, but I can confirm that.
2007.
Yeah.
Okay. Were there any other agreements or announcements going back to your list here of MBNA, Fleet, LaSalle, Countrywide, and Merrill Lynch? Were there any other announcements relating to? Or around the same time period as the Fleet merger, any sort of announcements other than the Massachusetts Housing Partnership announcement? Or were there any other agreements that you entered into or any other goals that were set around that time period related to mortgage lending?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
I mean, the NACA, are you referring to NACA? I mean, we've had an agreement with NACA since 1998 to do mortgage lending.
I want to ask you about that in a moment, but I wanted to just go through the activities surrounding each of the mergers, and then we'll talk more generally. Surrounding the LaSalle merger, were there any commitments that were made to any third-party groups in terms of mortgage lending?
Not that I'm aware of.
Were there any, what I was deeming and other groups have deemed to be unilateral commitments or any sort of announcements of goals surrounding that time period of the LaSalle merger in terms of mortgage lending and the commitments to the community?
Not that I'm aware of. I just gave you the three public announcements that we've made setting goals.
Right.
Around, you know, what I call corporate social responsibility goals.
And I think that brings us on the list to Countrywide, and you said that's the $1.5 trillion announcement. What components of that related to mortgage lending?
Say it again.
The $1.5 trillion announcement in 2007, at the time of the Countrywide merger, what portions of that related to mortgage lending? Was there a mortgage lending component?
There's an affordable housing component to it that includes community development lending, meaning construction lending for multifamily. There is mortgage lending in there, but there's also affordable housing is defined more broadly, and that's one of four categories that we track.
And were you involved in the development of that component of the $1.5 trillion announcement? Were you involved in that part of the component?
That being the affordable housing?
Yeah, yes, sir.
Yeah, people on my team have been the people that have sort of defined the categories of things that we track and then work with the lines of business that actually generate the activity within those categories to get a sense of what's a, you know, reasonable projection that we're going to achieve over time, if that makes sense.
I think so. And could you explain to me about how that component relating to affordable housing, how that came about, how that developed, the process by which that component developed?
Do you mean, just so I understand, the component with respect to why there was a bucket of affordable housing, or what's in the affordable housing bucket?
Actually, that's a fair question. I was interested in both. There is an announcement
at
the $1.5 trillion. There's a component of that that's affordable housing component. What I would be interested in is the history that led up to that component. Was it something that you thought, you know, I think this is something we need to do? Is it something someone came to you?
That's why I asked the question, because earlier he explained how it came about, is that they went out to the business units and they found out what the projections were within the business units for these different things, and that's how they came up with these numbers. He said that earlier. That's why I'm wondering whether you're looking for that or for why it's called affordable housing and what's in the bucket.
Both, actually.
All right, so what's in those categories, I don't think there's anything terribly... there's no book that defines the four buckets. You know, if you talk to sort of community development broadly and what are the things that comprise community development activity, most practitioners would probably say there's affordable housing, there's small business as a sort of jobs generator and economic development activity, which may be the development of sort of anchor institutions that create economic activity. And I think the fourth bucket is consumer lending. And so those were the four buckets that probably existed long before the $1.5 trillion. So there were prior announcements that had these four categories set up that was generally an accepted breakdown of how you think about community development activity broadly. Mm-hmm. And so as we're going to talk about our community development activities, we got these four buckets. Mm-hmm. And those existed as sort of definitions back you know, there was a $350 billion, you know, goal that existed, you know, back in the nation's bank days. In the 1.5, we never changed the categories. So that's so the development of the four buckets.
I see. I see. Thank you. That was helpful. And in terms of the announcement of the $1.5 trillion and what went into those buckets, when was your first involvement?
Well, the $1.5 trillion, it was a 2007 announcement. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, you know, as we were talking about making a reaffirmation of our community development goals, knowing that we were going to be a bigger company post Countrywide, we went back and sort of recalibrated the numbers, because you were now going to be a bigger company. So how would that impact your community development activity? We would then go back to the businesses and get projections of, you know, what are your, you know, under these definitions of building multifamily and tax credits and mortgage lending, you know, what is the general projection of business activity over time? And you get to a number that, frankly, the business is comfortable with as a business as usual run rate, and you're then able to make a reaffirmation of your commitment to community development activity.
Mm-hmm. And I'd like to try to get into the specifics of the evolution of this process, how it goes on leading up to this. I think you said, and if I misquote you, the tape will set me straight, set the record straight. But you said, as we were talking about getting bigger and becoming a bigger business, help me understand who was as we were talking, and how did you learn that you were going to be a bigger business, to which sparked this $1.5 trillion commitment. What I'm getting at here is
$1.5 trillion goal.
Goal, sorry. Did someone come to you and say, Mr. Pleffler, we're thinking about acquiring Countrywide. We're going to be a bigger bank. We're going to be a bigger business. And we, you know, would like to get your thoughts in terms of our commitments to the community. Or was it something that the announcement had been made for the merger and that you had heard about it and then you sprang into action? What I'm trying to get at here is, how did this develop? You said, as we were talking about becoming a bigger bank,
Well, there's generally once a merger's announced, there's generally a, I don't know if the time you call it a transition team, or there's generally a team that's put together that works on issues related to the merger, and that team can be as broad as marketing and technology and what are all the different hierarchies and, you know, what are the merged teams going to look like, and so there's an enormous amount of activity that goes into merger planning, and one of the things that is a part of that process certainly is, Andrew, in your world of corporate social responsibility, you know, what are the issues that need to be addressed, and you're on the transition team, mm-hmm. which includes people from all across the company.
So were you then part of the transition team associated with the Countrywide merger?
Yeah, there's an official transition team, if you want to get technical, that I don't think I was on. Mm-hmm. But then there are, you know, more informal work streams that occur, so that certainly I was privy to discussions around, what's the combined team going to look like? What are the community development implications of the merger? What are the philanthropy mm-hmm. implications?
And the team that you were on that you described, was that formed before the merger was consummated? Was it
It's after it's announced, probably before, you know, what we call legal day one, meaning before, you know, the legal date of the combined company. And in that interim period, you've got a lot of people working on all sorts of issues related to the integration of the two companies, including, you know, community development and community investment activities.
And would you also have any role in terms of reviewing the Community Reinvestment Act legal obligations that the company had made to date?
Well, Community Reinvestment Act legal obligations would be compliance with the statute.
Yes.
So compliance with the statute, there is definitely a folks from people who worked on CRA at Countrywide, people who worked on CRA at Bank of America, talking about, you know, who's the, you know, I think Countrywide was an OTS regulated bank, we were an OCC regulated bank. What was the combined exam going to look like? So there are a lot of technical issues about statutory compliance that need to be discussed as you're going into the merger.
And would those technical questions about statutory compliance fall under you and your group?
Yeah.
Bank of America is part of it.
I'm sure with our compliance partners and, but yeah, again, Tish Seekers, the chief, CRA officer, is working closely with the counterparts at Countrywide to sort of get a handle on, you know, what assessment areas do you guys have? Where are the overlapping assessment areas? Are you in the middle of an exam? Have you just completed an exam? Is OTS going to suspend the exam once we become a combined organization? So there's a lot of technical issues to work through related to the merger.
And the affordable housing component of the announcement, was that in light of the technical compliance that you had reviewed? Was that entirely separate? Were they related in any way?
You mean the $1.5 trillion announcement?
The affordable housing component of the $1.5 trillion announcement. How was that related to the technical review of the CRA compliance that your group did?
I'd say pretty attenuated.
How so?
Well, I said that the affordable housing discussion was really going to the businesses to talk about sort of business activity that qualified under our definition of, you know, the components of the 1.5T. That's working with the finance partners and sort of the business leads to make a projection on volume and a dollar amount, whereas the CRA people are having discussions about, you know, do our assessment areas overlap? Where are your deposit taking, you know, what are your assessment areas based on where you guys are taking deposits in terms of statutory compliance, which is a much more sort of technical conversation about, are you in the middle of an exam? You know, like I said, whereas the 1.5T discussion is more about, you know, what are our volumes of activity here? Finance, you know, what's the projection of volume going forward, you know, community development, tax credit deals, what's that market look like going forward, so that we get to a number that we're comfortable with, which is very different than sort of the CRA compliance discussion.
I see. That's very helpful. Thank you for.
Yeah, I hope so.
I was getting confused by the two components, and I appreciate you clarifying that. And the 1.5 trillion component, the affordable housing part of that, would that have been made based on internal projections, talking to communities and community groups, review of past data? How do you get to then shaping the actual input into the affordable housing component?
Again, just to try to assure us that this will be at least the third time, maybe the fourth time he's gone through this. So I just, you know, it's on the tape. It's on your tape. It's on this tape. Do we need to keep asking the same question? He's really gone through this at least three times already.
Ask the question again.
What I'm interested in, the component,
the affordable housing component
that went into that.
Yeah.
Okay. Was that, how did you reach the number
in
that?
You go back to that.
And we haven't actually. I'm not understanding you. And please, I haven't only had one cup of coffee. I'm ready for my second. So forgive me if I'm asking a naive question. But how do you get to that number?
Right.
Help me understand how you get to that number.
Right.
Is it projections in the future based on the new combined company?
Yeah.
Is it looking at the past record in lending? Is it from reaching out to the community groups? How does that mechanically get done there?
Yeah, it's primarily an internal exercise of working with the line of business and the finance partners, looking at past activity and projections going forward, and saying, what are our business as usual sort of expectations of activity?
Time out. How do you open this? You've been doing this for an hour?
Our expectations of activity that will meet our definition of affordable housing, and then we roll that into a sort of 10-year goal.
I see.
And that's what comprises the announcement.
I see. I wanted to ask you about the 10Q from 2010, which is, I have a copy here if you don't have one in front of you. I'll make it easier and hand you the exact page at the second paragraph that starts with the Community Reinvestment Act. And what I'm showing you is the...
what's the page
number? I'm about to get there. But what I'm showing you is the 10Q for Bank of America for 2010, for the first quarter of 2010. It was filed on May 7th, 2010. The page number that I'm looking at appears to be 135. There's a paragraph that starts with, and I'll just read it for the record, is the Community Reinvestment Act, CRA, encourages banks to meet the credit needs of their communities for housing and other purposes, particularly in neighborhoods with low or moderate incomes. At March 31st, 2010, our CRA portfolio comprised 7% of the residential mortgage loan balances, but comprised 18% of the non-performing residential mortgage loans. This portfolio also comprised 26% of residential mortgage net charge-offs during the 3 months ended March 31st. Do you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Was this information that was reported in your first quarter 10Q, was that information that was collected from your group, or would that have been a different group?
Well, this is referring to stuff on the balance sheet, so I suspect that it's the finance people who are, reporting on the balance sheet performance, less of my group.
Who tracks the performance of the CRA portfolio? Who's responsible for tracking that performance?
Well, again, this refers specifically to those things that were on our balance sheet, which is, by and large, a pretty small percentage of overall CRA activity. Mm-hmm. So this refers to the portion of our CRA lending that was on our balance sheet. And so the people in finance that track our balance sheet performance, whether it's stuff we have in home equity or card or small business or CRA lending are looking at the performance of things that sit on our balance sheet.
I see. Is your group responsible at all for evaluating or tracking in any way than the CRA mortgages that were done? Sounds like the answer is no, but I wanted to make sure that you had no role then in tracking that performance.
Just time out. You said two things. You said, does his group have any role in tracking the CRA mortgages that were done, which is not what this is talking about? That's a point he tried to clarify for you.
Okay.
So what's your question?
Well, what does your group then track in terms of the performance of the mortgages themselves, not whether or not you're meeting your client?
Right.
I want to distinguish performance in terms of compliance from performance in terms of the actual mortgages themselves.
So the people that would track performance of this would probably be the neighborhood lending group within the home loans organization, because they're the ones that are generating the product. Obviously, they're concerned about the performance of product that comes out of their business.
And just so the tape is clear, when we say performance, we're talking about the financial performance of the loan.
That's right.
Right. Okay. Right. So was the community group, you said, I'm sorry.
The neighborhood lending group.
Neighborhood lending group.
Within home loans.
Okay. That does not report to you.
That's correct.
I see. That. Is to your knowledge, is there any tracking of the financial performance of the mortgages that were made by in the affordable housing component of the $1.5 trillion announcement that we've been talking about? Is the financial performance of those mortgages tracked?
I don't think they're broken out by performance under the 1.5T, to my knowledge.
Are you or your group involved in the disposition of the mortgages that are made in connection with the affordable housing component of the $1.5 trillion announcement?
I mean, if they're sold?
Yeah, if they're sold,
no,
if they're kept on portfolio.
Right, that would occur within the home loans business.
I see. Can we take a 5-minute break? And
sure, just so you've got a good sense of our minutes. And Mr. Butler has a commitment at 2, and he needs to be able to get lunch before he goes his commitment. And our room disappears at that time, too. So we really need to be wrapped up probably another 30. 40 minutes.
Okay, great.
I have 1 p.m. and we're back on record.
Wanted to get some specifics in terms of the names of people you interacted with within Bank of America in the business line leading up to the affordable housing component. You said you reached out to the business line, you talked to the business line. I'm be interested to know the names of those persons.
Did you personally reach out?
Well, I personally talked, probably was on calls with some of the finance people. You know, because anytime we're going out with a number, you know, finance needs to be comfortable with it. So, you know, I probably talked to the finance people for home loans. Mm-hmm. You want their names?
If you know them, please.
Greg Hobby is, I believe, the CFO for the home loans business. He's based out in Calabasas. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's probably the person I talk to, not just me, but yes, the people on my team to vet the number.
And would there be other persons that members of your team, to your knowledge, reached out to discuss within the bank this, the affordable housing component of the $1.5 trillion commitment?
Well, don't forget there's pieces that were not mortgage lending, but were broader community development construction lending that's in the community development bank, as opposed to the home loan space that's part of the affordable housing bucket. I actually don't know who the finance people that we worked with on that piece. I mean, if I needed to, I could get you that. I don't recall specifically who that was, but it would be the finance people in the community development business.
Do you know if the residential mortgages that were issued in connection with the $1.5 trillion announcement, if those mortgages were kept on portfolio or sold off, do you know?
No.
The name we've seen, Vicki Tassin,
yep.
T-A-S-S-A-N. Who is Ms. Tassin?
Vicki is no longer with the company. She was, for quite a few years, probably was in the community development bank, and then she was part of my team before she left the company doing some of this work, community development, working on working with community organizations. She was a sort of broad community development person at the company.
I see. Did you overlap with her in your tenure?
Yeah.
So when did she leave?
She left probably last year.
And how was her role different than your role?
Well, she worked for me. But she over the years, she didn't do philanthropy, for example. She didn't do a lot of the corporate social responsibility portfolio work. She was very much a community development person.
I wasn't sure if you said how long did she work for you?
Vicki was part of my group. Vicki worked for, probably came over to me in 07 or 08. Maybe even 06. So somewhere in there, I'd have to check. She was with the company for a long time.
Right.
In a few different roles.
And in terms of names, do you know who do you know the names of the persons who were responsible or who may have been responsible for the disclosure relating to the performance of the CRA portfolio, the financial performance? Do you know who may have been involved in that?
For the information in the 10?
In the 10Q.
Mm-hmm.
The names of the persons who may have been involved in that?
No.
Do you know? I'd like to ask you a bit of questions about the responses that Bank of America filed in response to our request. If you have in front of you the June 16th, 2010 letter response. If you don't, we can supply you with a copy.
June 16th, yeah.
I might turn your attention to the second page. There's a box in the middle of the second page,
mm-hmm.
that talks about BAC's goals over the past two decades have included the following.
Mm-hmm.
And it lists $10 billion mm-hmm. exceeded in 4 years, $350 billion superseded by $750 billion goal after 6 years,
mm-hmm.
$750 billion superseded by $1.5 trillion goal after fourth year, and a $1.5 trillion ongoing goal.
Mm-hmm.
Were there subcomponents of each of these goals? In other words, were there announcements or agreements or commitments that were then aggregated to reach these numbers? Do you know?
No, I told you these had four basic buckets of activity that that were tracked for each of these goals.
I guess what I'm getting at is we've seen over the course, and I can point you to in the NCRC's annual report, a number of different announcements concerning concerning commitments that were made by Bank of America.
Did Bank of America prepare this report?
No.
Did you prepare this report?
No, I've never seen it.
Mr. Sharp beat me to the question, but there is, for instance, a commitment announced, commitments announced within here of Bank of America Continental commitment in 1994.
What page are you looking at?
Get there in a second. There are various commitments that are announced within here, and what I'm interested in is they're to various groups. And my question is, the box on page 2 here, the commitments to the various groups, and I'm not asking you to attest the validity of the document from the NCRC, but rather to ask about this announcement of the goals. Would these goals include the commitments that were announced to various different community groups and organizations?
There's no formal connection of the two. If you're asking me whether or not there's some activity is that rolls up that would qualify under the 1.5 trillion, that might be. But it's not like we have subset goals that at the end of the year we run across the company, collect all that information, and throw it into the 1.5T.
What I'm interested in, is there additional detail that goes into these goals that are in on page 2 of the response?
No, we report on the four categories of activity at the end of each year. So we just released, and you can probably Google it because I think there was a press release on it, our performance for 2009. And what we say is, we did this much in affordable housing, we did this much in consumer, we did this much in economic development, and this much in small business.
And so the record is clear, we're not talking about financial performance, we're talking about much of these buckets were filled with respect to lending and investing in each of the four buckets.
That's right, volume.
Right.
You turn to the NCRC's 2007 annual report on page 25. There, under the target populations section, the first bullet says, in a 10-year span starting in 2005, Bank of America has committed $750 billion to affordable housing, community development, and small business lending. Part of this commitment will target housing, job creation, and economic opportunities in Indian country and rural communities through a specific $25 billion rural and Indian country initiative. Do you see that?
Yep.
Is that something you're familiar with, the description here?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, this is pretty much, again, this is NCRC sort of commenting on our activities. So this is their description, not ours. Mm-hmm. But it's generally accurate. If you're asking me about the specific $25 billion rural and Indian, mm-hmm. We do, that is a carve-out of the... I don't know where specifically it shows up, but we do say, and we said this again, I think we upped it to, in the 1.5 trillion, I think we upped it, but we do report out on our activity in rural and Indian to demonstrate that rural is not being left out of our community in lending and investing.
Okay. And is the commitment described on page 25 of the NCRC's annual report, is that reflected in the chart on page 2 of Bank of America's response? And if so, could you show me where?
Yeah, this would be, first of all, they say has committed. I think what they're, you know, again, that would I think, be the $750 billion goal that we announced in 2004.
The NCRC suggests that this $750 billion goal in 2004, you said?
I say we announced it in 04, but they're not incorrect. We say that it's the year, the clock started ticking January 2005.
Sure.
Of what we were going to track.
This document from NCRC on page 25 seems to suggest that it's in connection with a particular group, yet your response on page 2 doesn't mention any particular...
Where does it say that on that page?
The part of this commitment will target housing, job creation, and economic communities, opportunities in Indian country and rural communities.
And what group is there a commitment made to?
Indian country and rural communities.
It's a community.
Communities.
Right, not a specific organization. When you say group, right.
If you read the response, it says, while some community development lending is undertaken in partnership with community-based organizations, the vast majority of CRA-qualified loans are not. I'm looking for the disconnect.
Well, what I'm trying to figure out is where the 750 is reflected in your responses on your chart, because
can you really not figure that out?
No, I can't. The detail on this report, the NCRC's annual report, describes about a commitment to affordable housing, community development, right, small business lending,
right,
and it describes a level of detail that doesn't seem to be in the answers that.
Can you explain
that
before your answer? Can you explain
America?
Why that is the case? Because I don't see that.
Okay.
Everything that is there, first of all, it's an NCRC document. Mm-hmm. Second of all, I don't even understand what you mean.
Okay. Simple. You were looking at the chart.
Right.
And we were talking about page 25 of the NCRC, and
right,
I asked where it was reflected in the chart.
But you're asking where someone else's statement is reflected in the Bank of America letter, right? So there's an immediate disconnect, first of all. You're relying on this as if this is a gospel written by whomever's NCRC is. And he's saying he believes it is reflected in the $750 billion goal that is on page 2, which I think you probably figured out anyway, which is why you asked. I don't understand the question. And if you do, you can answer it, but I don't understand the question. That's not for us. I believe that's probably for the 2 o'clock meeting.
It's for 2 o'clock, but that's fine. You can go ahead and bring it in.
Okay.
Great, bring it in. That's great.
The connection is this $750 billion and the $750 billion on our response, I would venture to say, are the same thing.
Okay.
The same goal. They're referring to the same announcement.
Fair enough.
And if you read your specific interrogatory, it says list each commitment to a government body or to a third party, such as a community-based organization. And as far as I can tell, when I look at this, the Rural and Indian Country Initiative is not a specific entity. So I don't think there's any disconnect between the answer and the question that was posed to Bank of America by the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission.
Page 28 of the NCRC's annual report. The bottom of page 28, mm-hmm, last bullet. Bank of America in their 1992 agreement with Southern Nevada Reinvestment and Affordable Housing Committee agreed to provide $18 million in loans to nonprofit affordable housing projects at below market interest rates. Is that description of an agreement, do you know if that's accurate? Are you familiar with that?
I have no knowledge of that. 1992, what they refer to as a 1992 agreement.
Okay.
Never heard of it.
So do you know if that's reflected in the answer to Bank of America from Bank of America on page 2?
If he's never heard of it, he can't answer that question.
The answer is you don't know.
I have never heard of that agreement before in 1992.
Sure. There are a number of different agreements represented in the National Community Reinvestment Coalition's annual report here that they assert are from Bank of America. I understand you have a 2 p.m. meeting today.
Can you just walk through the ones you're talking about? If you're going to state that on the record, I wish you'd tell us which ones you're talking about.
I'm getting there. Would you please not interrupt me every single time I try to answer a question? The agreement, there are a number of different agreements that are represented in this document that's from a third party. I don't know if these agreements are correct or not. And what I'm asking you is if we provided this document to you from NCRC, which is a public document, can you and your group confirm whether or not these agreements were in fact made? Is that something that your group has the capacity to do?
We'd be happy to do it. Bank of America, we'd be happy to get that done for you.
Okay. So we had talked about that preceding the responses.
Wait, what did we talk about?
I had discussed this document with Mr. Brown before the responses in connection with our request, mentioned it specifically to him, and asked about whether or not these agreements were in fact made. And that's what
I never heard that.
And that's what we want to know, if these agreements were in fact made. Because they're coming from a third party group,
right,
and
okay.
The best sources is obviously your group.
Right. We can look at those.
Okay. Great.
Right, we're happy to take a look at it. I say that, you know, our conversations, we can have somebody else there and we take good notes and try to respond to the requests that we got. And I don't believe that this was a specific request that we received from you.
All right. Okay. But you do have the capacity to go back and check to see if these agreements took place.
You just said we would do that.
Yeah.
Okay. No, he said you would do it. I wanted to make sure your
group has the ability to do that
to go back and do
sure.
that. Sure. Appreciate
it. I mean, I have no idea whether there's any record. You refer to the Southern Nevada thing from 1992.
Right.
You know, I have no idea whether there's anyone around who remembers that or not, but we'll check.
Sure. What we would be interested in is to determine whether or not these agreements that are described by this third-party group were in fact made, and whether or not they were fulfilled by the bank, and to the extent that you have any performance information, we'd be interested to know how those mortgages performed, and we'd be interested to know as well what type of mortgages were made to the extent that you have that sort of information.
Because you all believe that this had some potential connection to the financial crisis. Is that the reason you want to know this?
There are a number of commitments, Mr. Brown, throughout 2000, this past decade, including some in 2004, that we can go through if you want to take the time to do that. I'm happy to go through each and every one of them. But I'd be interested to know if you could just check your records to find out if they were made, how they performed,
On your Southern Nevada, that's not even mortgage lending.
At affordable housing.
Yeah, so that's probably to a multifamily project that was rental housing.
That's your guess.
Would be my guess.
Sure.
Right. That's
sure.
what. Well, this is saying affordable housing projects at below market interest rates. That's
sure.
That's probably construction lending. So you want to know not just mortgage lending, but
let me back up here. We'd be interested to know what those commitments were exactly, whether they were mortgages or other commitments, were they made, how were they made, and how did they perform if they were mortgage commitments. If they were not mortgage commitments, I'm not interested in the performance, but I'd be interested to know how the mortgage commitments that were made, if they were in fact made as described in this document, how they performed.
I just want to add that it's important to the bank. Do you have any reason to believe that CRA goals that Bank of America entered into had anything to do with the financial crisis? They caused the financial crisis with financial difficulties of the Bank of America and material.
Yeah, we're on record as saying we do not believe that was a cause of the financial crisis.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Before we go off the record, I just wanted to say that the taping of the conversation today was a matter of policy for the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission. And so the extent they were being taped today, it is because the Crisis Commission has insisted on it, not because we voluntarily agreed to do it.
Okay. I've got 1:25 p.m. We'll go off record.